Oh yeah, welcome back to the Firing at Pins Golf Gambling Show, the most cursed golf and gambling show here on the internet. Welcome back. I'm the host, Jeff Clark.
That's not true.
I have hit 9 outrights pre-tournament since starting this podcast last year, and not a single one of them I've given out in this podcast, including last week's Mexico Open winner, which me and a third of the internet hit on Jake Knapp, 40-1. Good shit on us. Apparently, we're all using the same fucking model, but I just can't give out a winner here. If it weren't for you.
You didn't say it on the... Oh, because we didn't do a pod last
No.
week. Oh, that's right. You wanted to, but I didn't.
I don't want to put that on you. I was lukewarm about it. I was literally 50-50. I asked you, and you're like, yeah, I'm not that into it. I'm like, neither am I. I would just want to... I just like getting out the podcast for content, and I like shooting the shit with you about golf betting, and I would have been down, but I was kind of forcing it. So I was cool with taking the last week off.
I had nothing to say. I bet the two favorites, and it didn't work out. I bet Finau and Højgaard, because I was like, one of these guys has to win this, right? Because this field is just trash.
Yeah. Jake Knapp just punished the ball for 3 days. Got a little weird in the final day.
Got real weird. I was like, I don't normally talk about golf with my dad, like pro golf. He doesn't watch pro golf, but we happen to be on the phone, and I'm just like, you have to turn this on. Like, I've never seen this before. This dude is winning this golf tournament by 4 shots, and he's shanking the ball, like, a lot. Not just like, oh, that's a nervous first tee. Like, dude was hitting, like, duck hooks into the water. That shot he hit in the water on, I think, like, 3, he might have been the only guy who put it in that water the entire tournament. Like, there's no reason for that water to even be in play for a tee shot for a professional golfer. He literally shanked it. And I'm like, what is this? What is happening?
Yeah. I actually had a free roll on him in the fourth round, because entering the fourth round, I placed like a half unit on Sammy Valimaki. I think that's how you say it. I got him at plus 475 because obviously he's the only one that could catch Knapp. And I was like, I don't like hedging, and it wasn't a hedge. It was just a bet so I can get a free roll. But I was like,
it was a hedge.
It is.
You hedged.
It was.
Just saying.
No, I didn't. I only put $100 on it to win 475. It was not a big bet. It was just a free roll.
A light hedge.
But, like, I was thinking to myself, it would be really financially irresponsible for me not to just get a free roll out of this. You know what I mean? Because my worst fears were confirmed. Like, this dude gave up the 4-stroke lead and 5 holes, 6 holes, like one of those quick. Two. It was real fast. And then I was looking at Valimaki minus 140. I was like, oh, shit.
What's interesting, though, is that that's kind of the mental part that goes into a golf tournament, though, because Valimaki goes into Sunday with no real pressure, right? You're down 4 shots. Like, yeah, you might have to play perfect, but I think it was easier for him. And then once he got tied, you notice Valimaki started getting a little loose with his shots, where it was like, oh, I could – because I think you go into Sunday thinking, I'm probably not going to win this golf tournament, right? If you're Valimaki. Like, I'm 4 shots back. This dude's been ripping the hell out of the ball. He outdrives me by 30 yards on every hole. I'm not going to win this golf tournament. That's fine. You know, play a good day, finish second. Still great for him.
Yeah, he didn't bogey for 30 holes, Jake Knapp.
Once it started to creep in, you know it. Like, at some point, Valimaki's like, oh, I could win this. And then all of a sudden – he starts getting loose. And actually, it was that flip for Knapp, too, where he went from, like, there's a weird thing that happens with golfers playing with a lead versus playing from behind, and you hear it a lot. Like, that part of the mental game, it's a lot easier to chase than it is to be chased in golf. They say it all the time. Because it's also the one sport where you can lose points, right? Like, no other professional sport, they still have to catch you, but you can't give them points. I mean, you know, obviously you could throw a pick six, but that's not – you're not losing points.
Yeah.
The way you do in golf.
And you can't play defense to stop it. Like, if they light it up, like, that's that. There's nothing you can do.
I mean, Hideki winning that tournament a couple weeks ago by shooting a course record on Sunday. The hell are you going to do?
I know. And I didn't give out Hideki pre-flop. I didn't give him out live mid-tournament, even though I bet him.
Zalatoris. And Zalatoris actually played fine on all the way through. Played fine on Sunday. Just fine wasn't going to win a tournament with a guy shooting a course record.
Oh, after watching that Zalatoris performance, I mentally already decided to bet him in the Masters. Zalatoris is back.
So what's funny about that is I saw a tweet somebody sent out that was like, oh, here we go. All the DFS guys are licking their chops that they can finally use Will Zalatoris again. It's like, is there a thing that I don't know about that he's just like this like gambler's favorite, DFS favorite? That because the guy was like, I don't get it. I don't get why you guys all love Will Zalatoris so much. I like Will Zalatoris, and he's a great player, but I don't know. It was an odd thing that – it's funny that you said that because, like, I saw a tweet saying that people like you were going to say that.
Oh, for sure, yeah. I think he is, like, a fan. I think gamblers like him because he hasn't won as many tournaments as he should, and his ball striking is just as elite as it gets, and it's just if he can get a hot putter, and it's always kind of like – attractive and enticing for betters. I fall into it literally every week.
Better at putting too.
Yeah. I think you made a great point a few minutes ago about the Valimaki nap thing, where it was like he came back and that lead evaporated so quickly, not based on anything Valimaki did. So like, if he had the momentum and he was just playing well, he could have just probably carry that right past Nat, but because he didn't do anything to get the tie, and then once he was tied, it's like, all right, now I have to play well. Maybe that's when it like got into his head, like you said, like once he tied Nat, all of a sudden he got nervous as shit.
Yeah, because I think his plan was to do what he was doing. Like, look, if I shoot one under today, I'm probably going to finish solo second, which really is probably his goal going into that day, yeah. Right? Like, again, you're chasing. Even I thought it was so interesting. And so actually, I give Valimaki a lot of credit for this. When he turned and asked the scorer or the rules, what's the score? Did you see that? Did you watch
the end? I didn't see that part. I watched the end, but I didn't catch this.
Valimaki hits his drive under the out-of-bounds fence, which means he's going to have to take an unplayable. It's, you know, winning the tournament at this point is out because he was two shots back. So he either needed to, you know, make eagle and have Nat make par or needed Nap to make bogey on a par five. Yeah. So anyway, he realized,
he had a provisional because in case the ball went over the fence.
Right. Or through the fence. Right. Yeah. Which it didn't. But the point was he asked the rules official, what's the score? And what he wasn't asking what Nap's score was. What he was asking was, where are the guys behind me? Because there was a log jam in tied for third at like 14 under, and dropping from solo second into that tie would have cost him a lot of money. And just for positioning, for like the PGA Tour's sake.
Yep.
And he knew at that moment, like, I'm not going to win this golf tournament, but I have to finish second place. So I need to do what's right for me to finish second here. And I thought that was smart that he actually made his decision based on like, all right, what do I need to do to make sure I don't lose where I am right now? I thought that was interesting and really smart. And I was so glad that I think it was on NBC, that they caught that on the microphones, and the commentators talked about like, wow, what awareness to be like, what do I need to do to not blow this completely?
Yeah. Yeah. That was a hell of a tournament. I'm excited to finally get in the winning side of things. Hopefully I can keep the momentum going here. We are starting
doing the podcast.
So right.
You're guaranteed not to hit.
Yeah. Yeah. All I'm these
just waiting
are
for you
losers
to come out and be like, all right, I'm placing outrights on Rory McIlroy, Cameron Young, Russell Henley, Eric Cole, and Tom Kim. Like, oh, okay, the top five. Just trying to really make sure you cover your bases.
Yeah, I don't even want to win. I just want to not lose. So this is the first ever Cognizant Classic taking over for the Honda Classic. The Honda.
Didn't it have a weird name? Didn't you tell me it has like a full? Yeah, Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches. The hell is that?
It's a real mouthful. Yeah,
it's too much. Come on.
Yeah, kicks off the Florida Swing, which I love. A lot of the golfers live like around these courses. It was always weird that the Honda Classic,
they're in Arizona. Those are like the two places called the PGA golfers live.
Yeah. Or St. Simons in Georgia. That's another popular one. Yeah. But this is the first of the Florida Swing. Usually has a pretty shitty feel. That's why Honda pulled out. But because of the reorganization of the schedule here in 2024 and moving the Mexico Open up, this has a pretty decent feel. Rory McIlroy, 2012 Honda Classic champion, is the favorite at 7-1.
Does he have something against Honda? Because it's like Rory never plays in this, and then Honda pulls out. He's like, all right, I'm in. Honda's going to be like, bro, what did we do to you?
No,
you couldn't show up at any time when it was the Honda Classic. Now all of a sudden you want to play.
He won in 2012, but it was just the reorganization of the schedule because everyone wanted to take the Honda Classic off to get ready for the Arnold Palmer, for the players, for the I think just those two are the biggest ones, right? Yeah. Valspar isn't that big, but still part of the Florida Swing.
Still gets a decent field though.
Yeah, it does.
Because I almost went to that last year.
Because people are well rested. You like Enosbrook, right? The Valspar course.
I haven't been there.
Oh, but I thought you said you usually like you like that tournament. You like that course.
I do like that tournament. Like I said, we were in Tampa last year around that time, and that was actually brought up. Like, should we go? We ended up not going, but it was definitely it had a good enough field that I thought about going, and I wouldn't go if it didn't have a decent field.
That has a pretty good field. This the Honda. Excuse me, formerly known as Honda, the Cognizant has a pretty good field. Roy McIlroy, the favorite at 6.5 to 7.5 to 1.
I feel like we have to redefine like what a good PGA Tour field is anymore with all the LIV stuff. Like, yeah, this is a good field for the PGA Tour right now, but like, is it a good field? I was looking at the odds board and I'm like, JT Poston is top 10 win odds? Ugh. I don't know about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I hate the LIV Tour for what they've done to the PGA Tour.
It's true. I mean, I agree with you.
I don't know. I'm just trying to make the best of a...
Ruined professional golf, for sure.
For sure. But let's just try to make money here. All right? I don't want to sit here and complain about the LIV Tour because I could make a whole podcast out of this. Cameron Young is 22-1, and I don't effing get it, dude. Newsflash, this guy's never won shit. Eric Cole is right behind him at 25-1. How does Eric Cole, how is he 25-1 and he lost in a playoff last year to Chris Kirk, who's also in the field, who won a signature event earlier this year, and he's 40-1. How does that, I don't get how that adds up. I think kind of goes to your point.
The Taurus effect. Cameron Young's kind of the same.
And Eric Cole's also kind of the same, where he's gotten close a bunch of times. Cameron Young more so. Both young guys on the rookie tour. Russell Henley, who...
I mean, look, these guys got to win their first tournament at some point, right? Like, I think everyone just kind of tricks themselves into thinking, like, I'm going to be on it when it happens.
People have been saying that about Tommy Fleetwood for years.
He did win, though, didn't he?
Not on the PGA Tour. On the DP World Tour, he's won several
times.
No,
but what... He didn't... No, he won something.
No, the closest he got was when Nick Taylor buried that 72-foot walk-off in the Canadian Open. Oh,
that's
right.
That was supposed to be his win, and then he still couldn't get it done. That's right. That's what I'm thinking of. You're right. You're absolutely right.
Could have easily been a three-putt, and Nick Taylor was like, nope, walk-off. Russell Henley is got the fourth best odds, and your guy, Ben Ahn, has the fifth best odds.
Not my guy.
You like Ben Ahn.
I liked him one time. I said I might bet him in this tournament. How does that make him my guy? Like 3 weeks ago, I was like, I might bet Ben Ahn here. Now he's my guy.
Maybe I'm Mandela effecting your love for Ben Ahn.
I think you are. I don't bring him up that often.
All right, my bad.
I like it. Like I might bet him here. I don't know. Maybe. Actually, the guy you just glossed over quickly is the guy who I do consider to be one of my guys, and that's Russell Henley. And I'm probably going to be on Russell Henley this tournament.
So real quick, step back for a second. We are in a fantasy golf league that starts this event because you are better with brevity. Can you explain this real quick to the listeners?
So we picked three. It's a take on the one and done pool, which most people are familiar with. The rules are similar in that, you know, whatever your golfer gets in prize money, you get as points. Except in this, you pick three golfers instead of one, and you can only use each golfer three times throughout the course of the season. And then there's also a prize. Each tournament is its own event. So if you score the most points or your golfers get the most prize money in one event, you also win the week. You essentially win your entry back. So the goal is to win at least one tournament throughout the year, get your entry back, and then you're free rolling for the rest of the way. Which I know you love to free roll. So
yeah,
once you get your dub here, it's a Cognizant, and then you can free roll the season.
Damn right. That's what I'm hoping for. Henley is one of my three picks in our fantasy league.
Yeah, same.
I got him, Daniel Berger, and Tom Hoagie, two of which Berger, made my car.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Why Berger?
Well, he was 16-1 to win this event in 2022 before he got that back injury, and it was a much tougher field, right? This is pre-Live Tour. And he showed enough form in his previous start at the Phoenix Open. I think he finished like T29, but was ball striking like it Berger, pretty well.
And I actually bet him at the Phoenix Open, hoping that that would be, but like, I don't think he's back yet.
No, I'm trying to catch a falling knife, so to speak, right? So that's kind of like, well, Zalatoris broke out last week at the Genesis Invitational. I'm hoping to get the same for Daniel Berger.
I expect Henley to be the most popular golfer picked in this the pool this week.
Probably. We know no one's going to use Rory here. That'd be kind of crazy.
Yeah, no one's going to use Rory. Well, I shouldn't say no one. Some people will. Most people won't. Cam Young is right on that line of like, but I don't think people will want to, will feel like they're wasting a bullet with Cam Young, which puts Henley squarely in that like number one driver's seat. This could be an interesting one though, where you can kind of, this is where it becomes, there's almost a theory that you should play Rory, right? Because you think other people won't. Again, it's not necessarily great for your season long strategy because you lose a Rory bullet. And even if he wins, you don't win the most you could get out of a Rory win if he wins like a signature event at some point. That being said, you do get paid if you win this tournament. And Rory's 6-1 to win this tournament. Like, their odds makers are saying he's got a 16% chance to win the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
There is a school of thought that says, go ahead, blow that Rory bullet, hope he wins, hope other people felt the same way, that they didn't want to burn a bullet. And I don't know, I meant to just talk myself into using Rory this week.
I think one of our bosses, maybe, the dude Clint, had a wagering at Fox or Outkick. Smart dude. I love talking golf betting with him and just any gambling with him. He made a good point, whereas Rory hasn't won in the United States in a while now. So if I were to use a Rory bullet in a non-signature event, I might just use him to go back-to-back at the Scottish Open.
Okay. I mean, it's fair, but that's the other thing too. It's like, here's the part of the strategy you have to think about. I mean, you get to use in a one and done, it's tougher, but in a three and done, you get to use Rory three times. You know, are you like, how confident are you he's going to win a major, right? Like, are you certain he's going to win one of the major tournaments this year? Cause what's the prize money for this event? Do we know?
$9 million purse, 1.62 for the first wow, place.
Unbelievable that you had that. What a pro. all right, so 1.6 would be if Rory wins. You know, are you confident you can pick Rory three times where he's going to make more than that in a tournament? I'm not sure that there's a spot that he's... But again, that assumes he's going to win, which he might not win, in which case, you know. But like, I don't know. That's what you have to kind of think about. Is, you know, I would go back and look at last year and see who I used and how much money they, you know what I mean? And like, where did I use Scheffler? Like, where, you know, did I use Scheffler once and he made 110 grand? It's like, well, then I would have been better off using him when he won some non-signature event than I was using him in a tournament where he didn't win shit.
Yeah. I definitely got to go back and look at what I did last year because I was second to last. So I'm just going to do the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah. You should. But that's what I like so about it. Honestly, it is bad. But
so bad.
You don't realize when you do this stuff. And by the way, I don't think we ever talked about this, but you did ultimately win our football betting pool, the Mean Machine.
That's right.
So, Brad, yeah, I mean, that was pretty cool, man. I've never won. I finished second 1 year.
Yeah, I was pretty pumped about it. Hit that parlay, too. The Super Bowl
and
parlay.
And you got the Super Bowl right. So it wasn't even like you backdoored a victory. You actually went all the way. You were the number one team going into the Super Bowl and nailed the Super Bowl. Cost me about $600 because if I had not known what your picks were going to be, I would have made the same picks. However, I game theoried myself out of those picks because I knew that's what you were going to do and picked San Francisco instead of KC and missed only that one, which I'm annoyed at. And I will forever be annoyed at. And it's also why I think you should give me half.
It was a toss-up game, so you could have easily won that had it gone another way, obviously. or the coin flip gone.
We're not
the
here
way.
To talk about football, but I do think that the I like about pools like this is, it does. Like, you're a good golf bettor. You know golf. You know the players. You know whatever. But it takes, you know, a couple years or a year to see how these things work and figure out how to play them. It's not as simple as, oh, just pick the three best golfers or pick the three guys. You know, like, you have to decide when it's worth going off the board a little bit and trying to get one. My biggest pick last year was in the two-man event. You still only pick one golfer. And I actually decided to double up and pick both winners. And it wasn't even like the winners. It was, who was it? It was Nick Hardy and,
Hardy and
Davis
Riley,
Thompson? Right?
Davis Riley,
or Davis Riley and Nick Hardy, maybe. Yeah.
Sounds right.
And like, it was, that paid for my whole season. Cause I won that week. Obviously no one else picked both. Cause a lot of, like, in that tournament, the strategy becomes like, all right, do I pick two guys in the same team and try to nail both winners? Or do I pick three guys who are all on different teams? That way I have three chances to win the tournament. You know what I mean? Like, that kind of,
I honestly
thinking.
Didn't even think of your strategy as like an option until you
as an
did
option,
it.
Right?
And I was like, oh, shit, that's smart.
But if it's smart when it hits, but
damn right,
if
that's
Nick
all
Hardy
that matters.
And Davis Riley finished 60th, then I looked dumb as hell.
I don't know if I'm using this right, but is it confirmation bias we have here? Is this confirmation bias?
It is on your part by calling it smart.
Yeah,
because,
right.
Well, it's not really confirmation bias. It's more hindsight than anything. It's like, oh, yeah, that was genius. Like, yeah, it looks smart, but at the same time, you know. Anyway, sorry, we're getting way off track, as we always do.
If you followed me throughout the years, you know I'm a South Dakota girl at heart who grew up in a ranching family. And I know that America First isn't just a political movement, it's a kitchen table issue, quite literally. I always support American family-owned companies, ranchers, and farmers who put high-quality meat products on the tables of their fellow Americans. And my friends at Omaha Steaks are the experts. With Father's Day right around the corner, what better to give dad than the experience of world-class Omaha Steaks with the deluxe Father's Day gift for just $89.99. This package includes a mouth-watering assortment of dad's grilling favorites like Omaha Steaks Butcher's Cut Top Sirloins, juicy boneless pork chops, deli-style gourmet jumbo franks, and their legendary Omaha Steaks burgers. Go to omahasteaks.com and use promo code OUTKICK at checkout to order the deluxe Father's Day gift and get four additional burgers absolutely free. That's 24 unforgettable entrees for just $89.99 when you use promo code OUTKICK at checkout. Get quality steaks for the fathers in your life. Go to omahasteaks.com and use code OUTKICK and get the deluxe Father's Day gift plus four free burgers today.
Daniel Berger, he has a low blow ball flight, and
you're getting so much better at this. You're getting so much better at this.
Yeah, back to Daniel Berger. He has a low ball flight, and that's why he plays really well at the Honda. He was second here as a 100-to-1 shot in his rookie season, 2015, the year after Russell Henley won the Honda.
Now, wait a minute. Let's talk about that real quick. So you mentioned the low ball flight. Why? But see, what I'm reading is that this course has typically played very windy, but it wasn't last year and isn't expected to be this year. Well, and they've softened it up.
He is pretty long off the tee or has enough distance. But yeah, the low ball flight is usually considering the winds. So the
and
fact that
turned,
it's going to be less windy.
I'm sure you know this, but they turned the 10th hole from a long par 4 into a relatively short par 5. They essentially took their hardest hole and possibly made it their easiest, which is kind of wild for a course to do, honestly.
They took the hardest hole in golf. And
in
turned
golf,
it into
right?
easy. Yeah, yeah. They just added 22 yards and made it a par 4 or a par 5.
Yeah, I know. It's wild. I mean, it doesn't really change anything, right? Like, you still have to put the ball in the hole in as few shots as you can. It doesn't change a lot. Like, it changes the minus number, but at the same, you know what I mean? The hole's going to play the same.
Yeah. Yeah, I think because of which the winning score will probably be like minus 13, minus 14 this year. Maybe even a little bit better because it was lightest.
Favors Rory a little bit.
I mean, you can argue anything favors Rory because he's the best golfer in the field, right? I mean, if
it favors Rory that he's better than everyone else.
If you were
us, like, you can't argue that.
Of course, if you were straight up like I'm single bullet in Rory, I'm gonna bet one unit on Rory to win, one unit on top five, one unit on top 10, and whatever head to head matchups he's in. But yeah, all right, you probably win money doing that actually. If you did that with Scottie Scheffler. Yeah. Like, so, how many top 10s?
Well, yeah, so Rory's, he's plus 200 top five, plus 105 top 10.
Is that a BetMGM? Because that's where they'll pay out dead heat or ties.
No, it's not. But I mean, we're talking about him winning, right? So it wouldn't matter in that case. There's not going to be a dead heat if he wins. But one unit, six. If he were to win and you were to do winner, top five, top 10, you'd still only profit 10 units, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah. And you'd have to risk three. So, not a strategy I'm going to go with, but
I'm not going to bet Rory. I just think that there is an argument to be made in those type of pools where you get more than one golfer, that it's not as crazy to use Rory in this tournament as I was with you 100%. Like, there's no chance I'm using Rory here until I started talking it through and was like, is everyone else going to think that? Or are a lot of people going to do what we're doing and then reverse engineer it back the other way and go like, no one else is going to use him. I'm going to use him. I don't know. That's what makes these things so fun, man. Like, that's what I like about it.
I really like the golf league, and I'm with you. You can overthink it a lot. I just think because of the difficulty of the course and how random the results are from year in, year out, I wouldn't.
Just golf in general is kind of like that.
Yeah, this one's even crazier, though, because of all the water danger, right?
What are we up to this year on outrights as far as, do we know what the average outright is? Because it's still got to be pretty high. I mean, you said Knapp was 40, right? Hideki was 70.
Knapp was the...
Was he the shortest favorite to win?
Yeah, the shortest favorite to
win. He was, right, at 40-1, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, Hideki was 80. What was the one before that? Was the one before that Wyndham at 100?
Might have been.
Nick Taylor, whatever, at that Phoenix Open. They've all been... Hideki was the cheapest at 80-1. The other five were 100 or 100-1 or higher, and then Knapp was 45-1. So just officially, you are betting Henley and taking him in the pool? Okay.
I might not take him in the pool, though, because I may have talked myself out of the fact that everyone's going to use him.
Henley is 25-1 across the board. All right. Berger is my biggest favorite. And then I'm going with Keith Mitchell.
I should have said this already.
He was the last one to make my card, even though he's tied with Berger as the biggest favorite I'm taking. But I just feel like everyone was on him last week. He came out and bogeyed the first three holes at the Mexico Open. Clint was one of the guys that bet him, and Clint was pissed. But he rallied, finished T19. He was actually, I think, even par to end round one, and he's only been over par in one of his 21 rounds this year. Mitchell's playing pretty well. Like, he's obviously got the distance for this.
But he wears a visor, Jeff, and I need you to defend that part.
I can't. Not a visor.
Good. I'm glad you're not going to.
No, I'm not even going to try. He does have one of the coolest nicknames on tour, Cashmere Keith, though.
That's true.
He's won the Honda. It's his only win. In 2019, he won the then Honda Classic. He's second in strokes gained approach, third in success rate when going for the green. And because of all the danger holes, I think going for the green stats are important, which PGA
Tour...
Does this
mean, based on you being in double dipping in this 35 range, does that mean you're not betting your guy Sungjae, a former winner here?
I'm not, no.
You're blowing my mind to this week already, Jeff.
Dude, I love Sungjae, but I've made so many golf betting errors over the last year, and somehow one of them isn't losing a bunch of money on Sungjae. His game doesn't look right, and I'll lose money on my other Asian brothers, but not him.
Did you look at him this week?
Yeah, I mean, his ball striking's shit. There's really nothing that he's doing well. He's just not playing good golf and hasn't since like the summer of 2022, really. Like, there's no reason to back him here because he is a former winner, but you have the crazy results year in, year out, and so is Keith Mitchell. So I'm taking Keith Mitchell here. What's the next highest favorite you have in your betting card?
Probably a guy you've never heard of. His name's Sungjae M. Because I'm betting Sungjae here. I don't care. former winner. This feels like a really good price for him. He's priced the same as Adam Svensson and Sepp Straka, who I do like as well.
I have Svensson on my card.
No, you don't.
I do.
Okay.
Do you like Svensson or no?
We're going to fight.
Why?
You're going with Svensson at 40-1 over Sungjae at 40-1.
His approach play has been on point this year.
No, this is a perfect. No, this is a perfect spot for Sungjae to turn around and win a tournament.
Okay.
He's due. He's due, Jeff.
I wouldn't hate if you're right. You know how much I love Sungjae.
You will hate it, though, because you aren't betting him, and that would be kind of disastrous.
It wouldn't crush me that bad just because he's played so bad. If I didn't win money on Hideki, this podcast might be shut down. So
that's true.
It's not as, this wouldn't be as big of a blow to my like ego and confidence if Sungjae got there, but I might stick a bet on him live, excuse me. So what's your Sungjae now? It's just previous winner buy low price.
I was joking. Oh. I was just saying that. I thought it'd be funny. I want to talk about a guy I'm going to fade this week. Is that all right?
Yeah.
I got to see what his matchup is. I'm going to fade Erik van Rooyen. That guy annoys the hell out of me because I was on him before anyone else was.
EVR.
And he never. And again, he's another one of those like gambler darlings because he's an excellent ball striker who can't putt at all. But also, like, I just think emotionally and mentally, I think he lacks what it takes. And I think that showed itself with a really excellent first round. And then he basically was no part of the rest of the tournament. I think he's a little overpriced here because of that first round lead last week. People saw him a lot. He was even like kind of around on Sunday enough that, you know, they showed some of his shots and he finished. I think he's overrated here. And I'm going to look to fade him. Now, again, I'll have to see, like, what his matchup is. But, like, he's in a range with Doug Gim, Thorbjørn Olsen, both players I like much more than I like van Rooyen this week. You know, he's just behind Alex Noren, even Christian Bezuidenhout. Like, I just like those guys a ton more than van Rooyen. And I don't think he belongs in this price range. So he's a guy I'm definitely looking to fade this week.
He is -110 against Thorben Olesen at DraftKings.
Locking in. I'm absolutely going to be taking that matchup.
You mentioned the guy I have on my betting card. That's fellow South African Christian Bezuidenhout.
I like Bezuidenhout. Like I this is my whole analysis on EVR is I like the guys around him just so much better.
I got Bezuidenhout at 60-1 on FanDuel. He putted or played really well at the Genesis a couple weeks ago, tied for 24th, but gained strokes on approach, gained strokes putting, which is obviously the two most important stats here at PGA National, which hosts the Cognizant Classic. He is fourth on tour this season in strokes gained approach, and averaging +1.7 strokes gained putting per event. So he's a good putter. And has been dialed in with the ball striking. So I'm going to give it a shot. 60-1. The only time I bet him was, I can't even remember the tournament, but it was to be the top South African at 5-1. And he hit it for me. So I like Christian Bezuidenhout. I'm going to go with him.
I'm going to give you my long shot. Now that we're going through.
Bezuidenhout is my longest shot, so this would be the perfect time.
That's interesting because, again, like where we've been this year with the longer shots winning, you're not going to go off the board a little bit and try to get – hope it happens again?
I might, yeah. I might. I'll dig back into it tonight after the gym.
I know Taylor Pendrith isn't going to be that guy.
No. I'm going to dig back into the stuff tonight after the gym, and maybe I'll add one because over the last – since 2010, the average odds for a winner here has been plus – 120-1.
Wow.
123-1, technically.
So I'm okay. Excuse me. With that in mind, I'm not even really giving you a long shot. Lucas Glover. I like Glover at this track. This is a place where he plays well. He is great off the tee, at least at hitting fairways. He's a good middle iron player. Can't putt as usual. But like, he's got six top 30 finishes and two top fives here. He's 80-1. I like Glover as a long shot flyer here.
Yeah, and one of the comp courses is TPC Southwind, because of all the water danger they have there, and that's the site for the FedEx St. Jude Championship, which Lucas Glover won last season.
So. Beautiful. Thank you for making me feel even better. That's like, so in the pool, if I go Rory, I might throw in someone like Glover.
Gotcha. I mean, I don't know how many times you'll use Glover this year, so why not?
Well, it's not about even the usage. It's like, yeah, I'm not going to give away my entire strategy because I'm way better at this than you, and I don't need you drafting off me.
All right. The other guy that I have on my board here, I got Adam Svensson, which we already touched on, but he's eighth in this field the last 24 rounds. And just total strokes gained based on the stats that I input through Fantasy National, and seventh on my bet the model or bet the number model in over 40 rounds, ninth in strokes gained approach.
Who's his matchup? Because I like Svensson too. I just don't necessarily think he can win, but he's one that, and you know, I hate betting placements because I don't have bet MGM and I get super annoyed at the dead heat rules. I need to know what his, but he's a guy I would consider definitely in a matchup.
Nah, it's our two brothers fighting. Svensson's -120 favorite over Christian Bezuidenhout.
I like Svensson there.
Whatever. If Svensson's first and Bezuidenhout's second, I'm happy because I got money on them both. And then the I think the final guy on my card, right? The final guy would be Tom Hoge, who helped me fall in love with golf betting when he won the 2022 AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. I tweeted out my pick. I single bullet Tom Hoge in my third golf tournament I ever bet at the AT&T Pebble Beach. I bet him top 10 to win at 50-1 and a head-to-head over Denny McCarthy. I was so fucking pumped, dude. That was one of my favorite gambling wins ever, even though it wasn't like the biggest.
It's a great transition too, because I'm also gonna, I think Denny McCarthy's on my card as well.
I don't hate him at all for this course at all. Yeah,
I like him for this course. I like having at least one good putter on my card because, you know, at some point inevitably Thursday or Friday I'm going to be sending you screenshots of missed 4 feet putts from Lucas Glover. And so I just need to be able to like make myself feel better and see Denny McCarthy draining like 9 footers with regularity so that I don't kill myself.
I like that for like mental health.
You need it. You're going to bet someone like Lucas Glover and have to look at that, like, you know, iron shot to 154 yards, 3.6 inches to hole, you know, shot three, putt 4.7 feet, 2.5 feet from hole. And you're like, what? How?
Yeah.
That's a tap in. What are you doing?
Hideki's toughing me up with that stuff. Like, oh, anytime I see it inside of 4 feet, it's like, all right, I got to pay attention to this tracker because this is not a lock.
Wait, who was it? I was texting you about this. Who four putted this weekend?
I don't know this weekend.
Oh, I think it was Keegan Bradley. I don't know if it was this weekend.
He didn't play the Mexico Open.
Okay, then it was last. It was the week before. Keegan Bradley four putted, including back-to-back missed putts from inside 4 feet.
Yeah. Well, we remember Rory three putted inside of 3 feet and lost by one stroke in that tournament that Tommy Fleetwood recently won on the DP World Tour.
It's amazing.
And then Rory just shook it off and won next week. But yeah, Tom Hoge, best approach player on tour this season, through what, seven events, playing really well lately. He finished T6 at Pebble Beach, T17 at Phoenix Open, and T8 in his last start at the Genesis Invitational, two of which are signature events. I think the Phoenix finish is pretty encouraging because since that's like a driver heavy course and he's not very good at driving the ball, I think the lack of distance here at PGA National fits his skill set. Although he's missed the cut four straight appearances here at this tournament, but You know, there is a reason he's 50 to 1, and that is the reason. He's putting his ass off, though, dialed in with the irons. And he set a course record last year at TPC Sawgrass in the third round of the Players' Championship, which, as we know, is part of the Florida Swing and a comp course to this one. So, obviously, much tougher field. Hopefully, if he is ball striking as well as he did last year and recently, hit some putts, maybe he can get home for me. So, that's my card right now. I'll probably add one via Twitter. Just a long shot, a dart, if you will. But locked and loaded, I got Daniel Berger, Keith Mitchell, Adam Svensson, Tom Hoagie, and Christian Bezuidenhout. Who's your favorite golfers?
I'm going to – this is separate of the pool, but I'm probably going – I have not placed my bets yet, but I'm looking at betting Russell Henley, Denny McCarthy, Lucas Glover with a flyer. I might – I'm going to bet a Olesen over Van Rooyen head-to-head. And I think that's really it, man. I don't have a lot of other looks this week.
EVR missed the cut last year here with a plus 14.
I'm looking to fade him. My biggest bet's probably going to be Olesen over Van Rooyen.
He's just doing backstrokes in the ponds over there.
That's it.
At the Palm Beach Gardens. Next week, Arnold Palmer Invitational, signature event, Bay Hill Club and Lodge. Love this tournament. Never profited off of it. Don't plan to do this next week, but we'll see. Hopefully I can carry the momentum I've had at the Genesis in Mexico through the Cognizant and throughout the Florida Swing. Are you going to be back next week, you think?
I'll be back next week, guaranteed.
You're not going to be in Florida doing Disney World stuff?
Fuck it.
All right. Show us some love on social media. If you can rate, subscribe, and review Apple Podcasts, on Apple Podcasts, the Outkick Bets Podcast, that'd be great. Follow Dan at RealDanZach on Twitter.
You can see me argue with people.
I know. You've been just going to war on Twitter lately.
Yeah, go check out my Twitter. I'm in a battle. Go support me. Go like my tweets.
Yep. And that's it. Till next week. Peace.